Dr. Calderon is here again to present, and actually I think this is going to be a really interesting topic because he looked at the CAP surveys and he's going to tell us what's wrong with them, and then we're going to argue with him and say that he's wrong. No, I'm just kidding. But one thing I wanted to say, see how he has the S is Jose. He actually is changing that now to a D, so it's Jody. That's what's on his UCLA ID. Or he might change it to a K after this talk.
He'll keep the accent.
Yes, he'll keep the accent.
This is part factual, part theory.
Think so much?
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to send tomorrow, right?
I'm going to send
tomorrow. Are you part of the time?
The methods section needs some development, but we should really finish that up and get that out. I think it'll be
Hello, everybody. Thank you. Well, surveys have always been an interest of mine, and I'm glad Rick is here because he could attest to that. We've been trying to build surveys since back in 95, and some successfully, some not so successful. But what I want to start with is the title of this presentation. Stevie, why don't you read that for us?
Overcoming cognitive and design barriers to completion of CAP surveys in vulnerable populations.
What's wrong with that title?
The CAP possession was not in there.
Well, I had to. My mic had
edited. Anything? What strikes you about it? Anything?
It's a complete sentence.
Well, it's not a complete. It's not complete. But does it convey the message? I could have written overcoming cognitive and design barriers to completion of CAP surveys by vulnerable populations. And so now you have a complete sentence.
Right.
But does this give you the message? And that pretty much is what I'm getting to at the end of this discussion. And jump in anytime, please.
Thank you. Page up and page down.
Alrighty. I think it's worth a little background on CAPS because way back, performance measurement was done by the structure of healthcare. That is, the availability of preventative and treatment services. But with time, people bought into it. Why? Because it was a standard of care. So, yes, you had to have primary prevention, immunization, secondary mammography, colonoscopy, tertiary treatment. So as all the scores nationally improved for you by using these performance measures, now they had less utility. How can you use everybody's scores if they're good to compare health plans, to compare services? So what happens is that the lens of performance assessment, performance measuring, shifted to non-procedure-based performance measures. So the procedure-based had limitations, and we shifted to non-performance-based performance measures. And that's performance by the process of healthcare, patient-centered reporting of experiences with healthcare, and consumer rating of health plans, clinicians, and groups. And pretty much that's what CAP does. The respondent reports and the respondent rates. They report their experiences, they rate the process. And there's a deep well of variables for comparative performance rating with non-procedure, and it could go on and on. I could give you a list of things that we could compare. And so this is not going anywhere for a long time. And CAPS, then, is the quintessential example of a non-procedure-based performance measure. It's a family of surveys, CAPS. It's been developed over 20 years. In fact, this year is the 20th anniversary of CAPS. Happy anniversary, CAPS. Happy birthday. It didn't marry anybody. Happy birthday, CAPS. But health plan surveys for adults and children, commercial, adult and children, Medicaid. They also have versions for children with and without chronic disease for each one. Delivery systems and supplemental items have become very important. Cultural competency items, health literacy items, health information technology items. These, from my perspective, are still in development. And one of the things about CAPS is that they do exercise formative flexibility, because it's been changing and it's keeping up with a lot of the issues that they find as they use it, and that's pretty cool. One of the most important is a patient-centered medical home. Now, the whole concept of patient-centered medical home is to have some place to go to help you manage your care. Make sure that all the aspects of your care are in line and that all the information is brought together. But that's not a new concept. Marcus Welby, family physicians. I mean, when I trained in family medicine, this was pretty much what they were teaching us to do, to be that person. But it's very important, and I highlight it because I'm going to be focusing on those items in this talk. Well, one of the problems faced by research in general, whether it be clinical or whether it be observational, is the lack of participation by vulnerable populations. Those are race, ethnic minorities, elderly, homeless, marginalized populations, prostitutes, addicts. So even beyond the marginalized populations, having a hard time with response rates, particularly Latinos. I know that AltaMed, which is one of the biggest providers in this county, is getting a 20% response rate from Latinos, and they have about 80% Latino patients of their clients, of their consumers. So what can be done about that? Why does that happen? Why does that happen? We talked about this for years, Rick. Why that happens? Well, there's ethno-medical reasons, ethno-cultural mores, but importantly, how Latinos in general perceive health and healthcare may not be the same perception that the people who develop these surveys have. And so there's this mismatch, as it were. Socioeconomics, of course, educational literacy. Can you read through the survey? Can you navigate the survey? Do you want to? Things such as time conflict, for example. I get an envelope with survey, and I got to deal with my kids, and I have to do so many other things. Am I going to sit down instead of watch my novela? Am I going to do this thing? I don't think so. I got to see that novela.
So what's happening this week?
Socio-political reasons are very big. Immigration, incarceration, social isolation. All of them have issues of trust involved. And I imagine the way CAPS is pretty much given is by phone or by pencil and paper, mail surveys. Phones don't work for a lot of people. There's a good reason for that. I'll give you an example. The Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance Survey from CDC, it's a statewide survey. It's a call, random digital dialing. And when I was in Florida several years ago, looking into the epidemiology of diabetes and of hypertension in African Americans and Latinos in Broward County, I couldn't find any information. So I went to the Florida State of Health, Department of Health, and the epidemiologist there helped me out, pulled up the data from the BFRSS, and the conclusion was we don't have enough data to draw any conclusions. They just did not have enough information. People are not responding to that phone call. If you're an immigrant and you have a family member who's not documented, or I'd rather say unauthorized, because I don't use the term anymore, they're unauthorized, you may not want to answer that call. Who is the Center for Disease Control? That sounds really scary. So these are some of the reasons, but probably the most important reason is communication. How do we communicate? How do we measure? Language. There's so many idiomatic variations in the use of, say, Spanish. In Chile, they speak one way. In Mexico, another way. In Colombia, Puerto Rico, Santo Domingo. It's just so different, some of the words. Basically,
Bronx.
The most common words in any language are what? The most common words in any language are mono and bisyllabic. So the simpler the words, the more apt they are to be common across Latino subgroups. And you also have idiomatic variations. Oh, I don't like this, but dare I say Ebonics. I don't like the term, but it's true. We grew up in neighborhoods where folks spoke a certain way. Yo, what's up, man? What's up with that, man? You know, and this is the way I speak. This is the way I hang. This is the way I roll, like what's his name said. Charlie Sheen. That's the way I roll. So we have to be very cognizant of the fact that the way we speak as educated people is not the way most people speak.
But I would call that slang versus Ebonics.
No, okay. Like, yeah. What I said is slang.
Right.
But it's not Ebonics per se. I agree. survey literacy, are they familiar with completing surveys? The more you do something, the better you get at it. And that's an issue. If you're not responding, you're not going to be good at it. Oracy, what is oracy?
This is a term that I've been using lately. We talk about literacy, right? Your literacy skills. Oracy, by definition, means how well somebody learns to communicate verbally. However, like anything else, there's two sides to that coin. How well do I receive that verbal message? Is it in my experience?
I go up to you and say, Rick, you have cold open thyroxis.
You have stone in your gallbladder.
That's more common language. So it's very important to realize that just because you have a survey, they can't read it. Let me read it to them.
And we'll see in a minute. That does not mean they're going to understand because you read it to them. What is their oracy skill?
Phone, we talked about that. Mail, we talked about that. It's a chore of the mail. You get a lot of junk mail. Like you have an envelope from... and it's a vendor that sends, not Altamed, your doc. It's a vendor sender. You may not know who that vendor is.
Right.
You may ignore it. So what we need is cognitive balance in survey research. What does that mean? Well, we're looking at people with chronic diseases. We're looking at people who are aging, who carry the burden of chronic disease, who are on medication. And we all know who practice or who have practiced that medicines affect cognition. Narcotics, that's named, there's so many. I go through this all the time with my family. And so these affect how well, how fast you think, how much information you can process, how well you read. Cognitive demand, this is something that's not paid enough attention to. What are you asking me to do and how much of a demand that is for me in terms of what I'm able to do? I have hypertension, diabetes, I'm tired all the time, now I'm on these drugs, and I'm 70 years old, and I get an envelope in the mail, and my novella at home. What do I do? And these are real issues. So we need to find a balance between the capacity of somebody to respond and the demand that we're putting on them.
Yeah, if it's a check, I'll cash it. Everything else I'll probably throw away.
That's right. Look for that. So how do we assess cognitive demand? Well, one of the most important ways, in fact, there's a paper that I've referenced in the handout. I don't know if they came through, I should, by Mullins. And so he was looking at the cognitive design of health-related quality of life surveys. And it's a very good paper. I also referenced it in an article that we sent out, the one on the KEEP survey with Keith.
Okay.
And that was referenced in there. And what Mullins lists is pretty much reviewing what the literature was on cognitive design principles to developing surveys. We'll get to what those are in a second, but display design principles are the sixth one Mullen lists. The first five I'll get to, but the sixth cognitive design principle he lists, I think should be taken out and put separately as a display design principle, because there are 14 display design principles that pretty much categorize into four areas. And so that's too much, really, to say that's just a cognitive design principle. So all I'm saying is that they list six. I listed six in the paper, but I'm at the point now where I'm saying, no, we need to take display design out and then have cognitive design separately, how things are displayed and what my ability is to interact with it are. Pretty much demand and my capacity. So I just wanted to say the perceptual design, legibility, top-down processing, right? You read top-down. Redundancy gain, meaning how can I display things more than one way to hit home with that message? Well, think of a semaphore, a traffic light. If you had red, green color blindness and that light flashed from top to the middle, would you get the signal?
Yeah.
There's more than one way to give that signal. And that could be audio, visual, colors, in different ways. So that's a really good concept to think about. Attention. And here, for example, I use checks and I use little design boxes, colors. Display is a hugely important part of getting information from people and conveying information. And a lot of the studies on display design come from engineering psychology, where the psychologists study how displays are given for air traffic controllers. Where are they? What's best for them? It's really fascinating area. But for the purposes of our discussion, most of it is going to be dealing with assessing cognitive demands. and using cognitive design principles. Simplicity, natural order, attractiveness, consistency, clarity. Just remember SNACK. S-N-A-C-C, without the K. Remember SNACK. Graphic complexity, readability. We added, in fact, in that paper that we published, we added readability as part of an expanded set of cognitive design principles. It hadn't really been considered as such before. And this is Keith Norris and I and some other people in National Kidney Foundation, some of our colleagues there. Natural order. We read from left to right, top to bottom. If I give you something written up, you know, from here up, are you going to read?
No.
It's going to be hard to read, depending on the culture, depending on the language. Or the Germanic, the Romanic languages.
Not everybody reads left to right.
Pardon?
Not everybody reads left to right.
That's right. I mean, if you look at, in Hebrew, you read right to left.
Right.
So, again, it depends on the culture. Depends on the language. And how we here read left to right, top down. And if English is considered the primary language, even though it's not the official language of this country, what is the official language of this country?
American.
None. There's no official language. 11 states have made English their official language, but the nation does not have an official language. So, okay, so attractiveness, that's, come on.
Do you attract me? I'm going to be drawn to you if you attract me. Something about you attracts me, I'm going to be drawn to you.
So we have to think about that. Consistency, item types should be consistent. Response options should be consistent. And we should look at the variation in readability. And that's another report that we did several years ago in terms of looking at the VFQ, the SF-12, where we saw a lot of variation in readability. So imagine a limited reader, somebody with limited reading skills, reading well, and all of a sudden something is at 14th grade level, and he's at 8th, and he can't understand it. That's skipped. I'm going to skip that question. And in fact, Fanwa and colleagues, after we looked at variation of readability, Sylvia also followed up on a study with variation of readability with Fanwa and found that for African Americans compared to whites, the higher the readability level of an item, the more item non-response was seen. So it's for real. So we have to look at that. Clarity, navigating, wording, what words are you using? We should be using more common words used, verb use. Why do we like to speak with so many words? Just because we have a degree. Let me just go on and on and on and on and on and on.
It's required.
I agree. All right, just remember SNAP. So if you look at the handout on the patient-centered medical home examples, just take a peek at that now. Let's take a peek at that handout. It's on the left side. It's kind of tiny. What you see is actual replica of 8 items from the CAPS patient-centered home medical home survey. There are 18 items that are used in different ways in different CAPS versions. The clinician and group version uses them, and there's also a clinician group version without them. But if you look at them, and look here at this list of cognitive design principles. Is this simple? This is on the left, folks, okay? It's on the left of this page. Would you say it's simple? Show of hands. Is this a simple survey? No hands, okay. Is it in natural order? Show of hands?
No.
Dr. Hayes?
The answer is no.
What the problem with it is, it's a two-column design, and yes, it goes left to right and top to bottom, but you have to go back up now, and that's not part of an actual order reading.
Right.
Although the CAPS instructions say that you should use a two-column design because it improves readability. Those are the words right on the instruction sheet. You should use a two-column design because it improves readability. Well, how does it do that? We'll get to that.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. All right. Is it consistent? It's pretty consistent.
Pretty consistent. There's four answers and two answers.
No, is it clear? If you were to read this, for example, all right, is that clear? Rick, would you read item number 14 for us?
Who?
In the last 12 months, when you phoned this provider's office during regular office hours, how often did you get an answer to your medical question that same day?
Do you think that would be clear for the average person?
Just an opinion. Maybe not. Depends on what averages. But anyway, so these are the issues. So we look at the CAPS, patient medical home, patient-centered medical home items, and there's some issues with its cognitive design. And that could be one of the major reasons we have such low response rates with the survey. So, and this is what it looks like. And so we see that the top down, yes, but you have to go back up to the right column to go back down, and that's not natural order. Well, let's talk about that two-column design. There's a study done by Baker, J.R., that is, right? And, and what they saw, this was done with undergraduate students, slow readers and fast readers. Now, this is pretty cool. They looked at full justification of words, meaning justify left, justify right, left justification, and then they looked at one, two, and three-column designs. What they found is that with slow readers, the one-column design was best. Even though the three columns showed a little increment upward, it was still better. They did better with the one-column design. Good readers did well with the two-column design. So when I look at a survey like CAPS as it is now, I wouldn't have a problem with it. None of us here would have a problem with it. But now consider someone who has less than high school education. We know for a fact that when you leave high school, say, or when you leave school, your reading skills drop 3 to 5 grades within the next 5 years if you're not a reader. So now you're talking about your fourth, fifth grade reading level, sixth grade reading level. And now 40 years later, you develop chronic diseases. You have hypertension, diabetes, chronic kidney disease. And now they give you all these drugs to take.
Jose, that statement's worrisome because most people who finish the 12th grade who are not continuous readers have probably finished the 12th grade at a 6th or 7th grade reading level.
Yes.
So if it's going to drop a few, drop more after that.
Exactly for that, because I was going to say, Keith, that in the state of California, the California exit exam only requires 7th grade reading level.
Yeah.
So how are they reading?
Right.
So that's very important. So apparently then, if we were to extrapolate this information, these are college students now. Now extrapolate that to poor readers. The slope of this line, I'm sure, will go way down much faster. The rate of change would be much faster if they did that study in, say, South Los Angeles or Watts. So let's look at the cognitive and display design assessment of one item, item number 16.
So can you go back to this slide?
Sure.
So based on this slide, then...
Come on, this one?
No.
Oh, no, this one. Okay.
Right. So the readings, so the two columns is then a good format for a high-level reading audience.
Exactly.
But the one column would be, the preferred for the
poor reader.
For the poor reader.
Yeah. And in fact, I could see why for someone at our level, the two column is faster. And that's why it improves readability. It doesn't improve readability per se in display, in cognitive design, or in say, reading difficulty per se of words and sentences. But it allows faster reading. So CAPS apparently is using that definition of readability, that is, it allows faster reading, not necessarily better comprehension for everyone. All right, so this is item number 16 from the patient-centered medical home. And if we just apply the cognitive design principles to it, one, you have a grid line between two columns, and grid lines are a no-no, pretty much. It just clutter. It tends to clutter things. One of the things that really struck me about the survey is that it has random truncation of the question itself. So if I were to run that sentence continuously, okay, and then squeeze it into a two-column format, then the word process is going to wrap around randomly. Just when that space is out, it just goes back out of space, goes back out of space. So then you have these four fragments, as it were, sentence fragments, that really don't provide you with a clear message. In the last 12 months when you phoned this, provider's office after regular office hours, how often did you get an answer to your medical question as soon as you need it. Now, Rich, you'd be interested in this because how do we read? We read in saccades, right? We group 10, 12 letters at a time as we read, and then we put words together. So each
line should have a concept.
Yes, yes, and that's exactly what this is all about.
Okay.
And so if we read in saccades, we also have these fixed points that may be, what, 200 milliseconds? That's enough time for our brain. This is just a stop. And at the end of this fragment, we stop, and then we go to the next fragment. But if I don't get it here, then I'm carrying on to the next fragment when I really haven't gotten the story. Hence the title of this talk, when I had those three fragments without connected words. So we also have a passive voice, and we know very well that we should be using an active voice to communicate in these past 12 months. And one of the things that I find problematic with the CAPS is that it asks the same thing every item. In the past 12 months, did you shine your shoes? In the past 12 months, did you iron your shirt? In the past 12 months, did you clean your glasses? In the past 12 months, did she, Mom?
Glasses. So English,
on and on.
Yeah, English is one of the few languages that's not normally, or at least in America, that's not normally, or it's very little in active form, mm-hmm. in active voice. So many other languages, much more of it's an active voice. Mm-hmm. Ours, for whatever reason, is much more passive.
But the conversational language is pretty much more of the norm. If I speak to you, I usually will say, "Hey Keith, did you see Rick in the past 12 months? In the past year, you know, I don't go to you and say, in the past 12 months, did you see Rick Baker?" it's not conversational. It's not active. But I understand what you're saying. Nevertheless, the active voice is the best way to communicate with people, particularly people with limited literacy and limited oracy. So bear those two in mind. Oracy is the verbal complement to literacy. Okay, just keep that in mind. So I showed the CAPS items for patients sent to medical homes to about 10 people in New Jersey and New York. And all I did was ask two questions. I flipped a rendition that I did, which I'll show you soon, and this one, and they basically picked a simple one, more simple survey format and wording without reading it. And I asked why. Too cluttered, too much, were two of the most common responses. Too cluttered and too much. This is from 85 to age 7, my grandson. I said, "Sai, come here. Which one would you want to read? He's in first grade, going on second grade." "That one, Poppy." I said, All right, why? I could read it. So I said, I'm going to use them again. And I didn't have to remunerate them.
Needs to hear about this.
but I'm not reporting about it.
Did you look at the handout, the correlation of Flesh Kincaid and five Flesh reading E scores? There's
a chart there for you that you can look at just to see how they correlate. Flesh reading E is the score from 0 to 100, with 100 being the most easiest thing to read. I prefer reading E scores to grade level scores because, like anything else, if you say 7th grade reading level, in a 7th grade class, as you pointed out, there'll be people who read at 10th grade and there'll be people who read at 5th grade. So just to do, when you go on Word and you do a grammar check and it gives you a readability score, 6.4, there's no such thing as a 6.4 reading grade level. You really have to have more of a zone of reading, three grade levels. So according to one of the experts in reading at University of California, San Marcos, who I worked with for a while in learning about these things, she said you have to group them at a third grade reading and fifth grade reading level are pretty close to each other. So they should be in range of at least three, not say one. But we use the one digit just to help us in research. So when we use it in this presentation, it's for research purposes. All right, so we see some of the cognitive design issues here.
Joe, so let me ask you. So the repetitiveness, I assume, going back to Ron, mm-hmm. the last 12 months, is to orient you to a time frame, right? To try to get you back to, let's say, okay, and do that. Do you know about any research about that? About how do you orient a person to a time frame And culturally, is there any difference to that orientation?
That's actually
Does that make sense?
Yeah. That's actually being addressed now by the CAPS Cognitive Data Project, which is, this is phase one. And if you look at the other handout, right on there, look at the other handout on the other side of the patient-centered medical home. This is an example of what we've done with in simplifying the CAPS, patient-centered medical home. And let me just say that all the CAPS surveys suffer from this malady, all across the board, they do. But if you look at this rendition, Rick, in the top it says, in the last 12 months, and that is being used as a reminder. You know, it's reminded you, and then you do first, second, in the last 12 months you have an item, then you have item six, and then you remind them again, in the last 12 months. So every two or three questions, put it down as sort of subheading. I've asked people about this, and some of the even better readers are frustrated with why they're constantly reminding me. I already know it's the last 12 months. Frustration leads to burden. Burden leads to, I don't want to do this. This is boring. I'm not kidding. That's a very important issue. I'm glad you brought that up, Bruce.
Thank you. But do people, have you, and so have you done research to see, as you know, when we've done some of this, because when we've done some of it, and we talked about this yesterday, mm-hmm. and I learned this from you, when we've done some of the interviews,
they didn't call,
you know, when you ask, we think that it's very clear, right? Mm-hmm. Then when you actually qualitatively ask somebody about a question that looks very straightforward, there's only one meaning to it. When you ask them and say, oh, they see something totally different.
Absolutely.
Right? So I'm just wondering if the same thing, and we know culturally,
yes.
different people look at time yep. very differently.
Absolutely.
But it's I mean, have you guys done any research to go back to, you say, in the last 12 months, do they really get that? Do you know what I'm saying? Do they really
absolutely.
Think the last 12 months? They,
think the last 3 months.
Or the last week, or do they really
right.
put it in that?
That's what they're right. saying, but they don't really mean that, so obviously.
Yeah, I'm just asking.
No, actually, that's a point well taken, Rick, but I would say that that's true mostly for people with severe cognitive decline that need those reminders like a child. How many times do I tell my grandson to put his shoes away? Put your shoes away. Put your shoes away. It's a normal thing with people. He's a kid, right?
Yeah, but I think there's also this other issue that whatever time frame you use, people are thinking more about recent past. So you could say 12 months, but they're not thinking about 12 months ago. They're emphasizing the recent past. So you try to standardize it, but you know, most people are... What's more recent is more salient. You know, but what you're doing, what, a lot of what he's presenting here has not been tested, but it's sort of a logical first step. This makes sense when you see yeah. it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it needs to be compared.
The plan is to test it now. The next phase will be to do cognitive interviewing with these and then hopefully actually put them into sort of a randomized trial to see what works better, say, in a place like Altamed, which is 80% Latino. Just as an aside, the more simple the passage is to read, the easier it is to read, the easier it is to translate into another language. It's a fact, Jack. Seriously. Just like the most common words are mono and bisyllabic across all languages. So simplifying to translate before it's used in a place like Altamed is very important. Also, the Medicaid CAPS gives you a 6-month time frame. And I ask why. And now there's a reason for that. I say we should just use 9 months. Why? Because, hey, listen, it's a physiologic norm. Children no. are, yes, no. I really thought about this, I'm not joking. 9 months.
Well, I'm joking. If you ask me the last 9 months, I have to think, when was 9 months? Are you saying last year? Right? 9 months is
well, how about 6 months? Is that any different than nine?
That kind of even better, but I was going to suggest that instead of saying in the last 12 months every two questions, what if in the initial introduction you say all of the following questions
yeah.
are asking about
yeah.
the last year or the last 12 yep. months?
That's another option. I thought of that, but and
then you keep reminding once a page or something.
My concern was for readers' cognitive burden. I could say it on top, but will it be remembered as you go through the fifth and the sixth
no.
item?
No. I agree that it needs to be reminded, but I think if you say it before it even starts as a reminder for the whole survey, it's better than seeing it here that probably they will just jump to the first mm-hmm. question. And it's
well, certainly the school of thought that if every item could be problematic, a reminder may be too much for some people also.
Yeah.
But at the least, at every page, at the least, every page. I wouldn't go any further than that, but I really concern myself with whether or not people are going to remember the time frame as they do this. We're talking to people with cognitive burdens, okay? And we're looking for that balance. So a simple subheading reminder isn't too much to ask for. Mm-hmm. As opposed to one page run.
Right. So last 6 months is used in Medicaid and Medicare, and actually now everything will be last 6 months. So
okay.
This won't be last 12 months anymore. That's cool. Will be consistent.
We should move on.
Months, no matter what.
If everybody in 6 months, I think that'd be great. I just have a problem with one survey saying 9 months, one saying 6 months, one saying 12. Is the data really comparable? Is that really comparable? It may be.
But I think as Ron said, probably, you know, even if it says 12 months, people are probably going back to the last 6 months.
Well, the logic of Medicaid was there was turnover. So if you required, you know, if you had the last 12 months, they would have to be in Medicaid for 12 months in order to answer it, and you lose people. So that's why that happened. But they're not usually compared. 12 months is commercial, you know, and you don't usually compare that with Medicaid or Medicare. But still, just for overall consistency, it's going to 6 months because 12 months doesn't really help you. You don't get into
this. This is better than the last visit because. And the last visit was the last visit. Why did you go fall down?
2 years ago. But the last 6 months, this is what happened.
Well, how do we simplify this? What do we do about this then? In terms of cognitive design and display, forget the A, that's a typo, reading difficulty. Let's start with reading difficulty. Now, the whole issue of what's called readability, grade level and reading e-scores, I have a problem with the use of the term readability, even though I've used it many, many years, because the display itself, as we noted with the two-column design, may improve readability. So I just go with reading difficulty for the purposes of this talk. What we do, first of all, this is how it is, with this random truncation and there's a grid line. Let's remove all of that, and this is it continuously on the page, one column. Same question, one column. And it reads at 14th grade level, reading e-score 53, and we want like 70 and above. So clearly this is way above the average person in Altamir or in Watts, and so we have to do something about that. Now, and I showed you the correlation level. Well, let's proceed. This is pretty much all the items for the patient-centered medical home and their readability scores. And you can see that this is where we want to be, and this is where we are.
Wow.
So we have a problem. Houston, we have a problem. Now, my approach in simplification has always been, and Rick knows this, and maybe about a few months worse, get rid of the junk. Get rid of the junk. Clean out your garage.
We were roommates.
This is... This is the item at 14th grade level. All I did was take out in the last 12 months and made it a subtitle, and it drops 3 grade levels. From 53 and 54 didn't change much, but again, 12th and 14th grade levels are not that different. So as I explained before. So you won't see much of a change in that regard in the reading e-score. That's why I like it better. It's more true, I think. Now, what did I do next? When you phoned this provider's office after regular office hours, how often did you get an answer to your medical question as soon as you needed? Well, if I'm calling the office, my doctor's office, I'm going to ask them about the game. Now, who's going to win tonight? How much should I put down on the Lakers? No, I'm going to ask a medical question, something related to my health. So we don't need that in there, in my opinion. As soon as, and you can differ, it's all right. As soon as, well, yeah, I'm asking a question. I like to answer like this, like now. When can I get that answer about my medical question? The other one is, how often? Now, me and Ron debated this, how often, but the truth is, if I get rid of how often medical, as soon as, when you call this doctor's office, and I use doctor instead of provider, you call, do you go to your provider's office? Do you hear people walking around to my provider's office the other day? No, I went to my doctor's office. The reason I use a provider, because it might have been a nurse, it might have been a nutritionist. However, if we're talking about the office, we're not talking about the person here, we're talking about the office. And that institution when you call this doctor's office after regular hours, did you get answers to your questions when you needed? Is that the same? Are we asking the same question? Now we're at ninth grade level reading. Now that's a significant difference. That's a significant difference. But is that good enough? No, we're still above that seventh grade level we really want to hit. What do we do now?
Walk over there.
But before we get to that, so this is the issue of wording in design and display. And then that's the macro level. Now let's go to the micro level. How about fonts? I should have written this in, but the first rendition here is Times New Roman. We read that all the time, don't we? Constantly. Most of what I read is in Times New Roman. So I have a good facility with it, no? You do too. This is Hightower text. Reminds me of Texas, so I know if I have a friend named Hightower from Texas, but when you call this doctor's office, but look at the difference here. These are both good. Why? Because both are serif fonts, S-E-R-I-F. A serif font gives you this little extra little swipe of a brush here on every word, as opposed to non-serif font that's very square and very round. And according to a lot of linguists and teachers of reading, serif font helps the eye focus in. There's a debate about that, but serif fonts pretty much tend to be easier to read. Now, look at the space between the words and space between the letters. Slow readers, people with difficulty reading, read one letter at a time, put it together to a word one. And if you crush those letters together, it's going to be much harder to read. Though, normal reading, we're recognizing words. We are. We're really looking at words to recognize. My grandson in first grade, my kids when they were in first grade, sight words. They gave him the sight word sheets. And I told him before he brought that home, sire, when you see Poppy, what do you think? When you see me, you see Poppy. You think Poppy. When you see a word, learn to do that. Before you read the word, just recognize the word. But slow readers have a hard time with that. Now, you can see there's more space between the letters and the words with the Hightower text. So I prefer using that, personally. You may prefer something else. But as long as it gives you ample space that's easier to navigate, then you're doing the reader a favor. Now, this is something that we sort of thought about. We've gone back and forth on, Julie Brown and Ron and I, for a while now, about how can we simplify beyond using readability or beyond using reading difficulty. Well, we know this, that shorter fragments, shorter sentences are easy to read, period. And shorter sentences, cognitive burdens are associated with diminishing cognitive capacity. We know that. And reading skills. Diminishing reading skills means slower reading. We know that slower readers require certain additional help in terms of column design, in terms of wording, in terms of type of font. Short length text promotes improved reading comprehension. Simple sentence fragments are shorter and convey one idea, hence the title. So we could take a sentence and fragment it so that when it's like a kid when he reads. I can't help but think about that. Because they're going to read one line, stop, and then they're going to go to the next line. They don't have the facility of reading that we have. So what we do then...
And we like to make the longest sentences possible in medicine.
Yes, that's true. So what does that mean? Simple sentence fragments. So the model basically is saying that simple sentence fragments, reading difficulty, this is the premise, is slower than for the whole sentence. Think of actual temperature versus wind chill. It's 20 degrees outside, but you know it feels like 5. Actual sentence reading difficulty for a whole sentence is higher than a fragment difficulty. So it's sort of like a wind chill factor. It reads easier. The actual reading level may be, say, 9, but the feel is going to be a lot less. And I'll show you what I mean. Now, this is controversial. This is hypothetical. But I believe it's going to work. Now, nobody. This is disruptive innovation. That's what it is. It ain't working. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. If it's broke, do something about it. So we should, as investigators, come on up with ideas. And what is research about? Just doing what everybody else is doing? That's a waste of time, unless it's proven tried and true, and we must do it like procedure-based medicine. We know that there's a standard of care. We know there's evidence-based medicine, and we use it. But when there isn't, why do we use it? Because the pharmaceutical company said, can it be frozen? Your kidneys, you know, and I have a problem with that. But anyway, point is, here we go. Ninth grade level, this is as far as we got. What I did is I truncated intentionally as opposed to wrapping around randomly. Intentional truncation. When you call this doctor's office, and what I want you to do when you take a sentence like that, you find that message. And then before you check the readability, just read it to yourself. When you call this doctor's office, after regular hours, did you get answers to your questions when you needed? It's the same sentence, but I'm giving it to you in digestible pieces, in fragments, simple fragments with one idea. Reading difficulty from 9 to 3.2. How did I get that? Put end punctuation at the end of these.
Yeah, why do you put the end? So that, to me, so I like the fragments. The end punctuation just seems like it may, for me.
It's the wind chill factor. It's the wind chill factor, folks. It's exactly what it is. Now I'm going to do the readability with that, and I guess, in other words, as when I read this, Keith, mm-hmm. like a child will in third grade, they're going to read this, they're going to digest it, then they're going to do this, and digest it, then do that, and digest it, and one goes on the other run.
Yeah, I think it's going to be abrupt to people who are used to reading in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The layout is good, but when you see
the... No, Ron, the end, I know what you're saying.
Right.
Not the punctuation.
Right.
But these are the instructions. Create fragments, add and punctuation, assess reading difficulty, remove and punctuation.
Right. Because the period.
That's just for assessing.
Oh, okay. Oh, for assessing.
Yeah.
Assessing. Okay, good. Right, right. I got these. I agree.
These are the instructions, right?
Right, right.
Okay, right. Remove and punctuation.
Okay. Still, one more thing is the space there, though. I mean, I think that's not a big deal, but people are going to say, why is there this space, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because you're not used to that. So it might have a little bit of a...
Well, that's why phase two, when we do the cognitive testing, we ask those questions.
Like a poem.
Would this trouble you?
Yeah.
For example, you know, is it a problem?
No, it reads like a poem. because poetry,
yes,
you
it is
only
like that.
Have...
It is like that.
You know,
that's a very good thought.
It's a common structure, at least for poetry.
Well, now that will work with a low literacy group.
Yeah. So what I'm saying, folks, is that
we got to make it rhyme.
Add that punctuation for running out of time. It'll show easier readability by the computer. But when you think about it, you're also reading like a third grader would in fragments like that. Because when you look at Ted and Sally and all the children's books, they're not run-on sentences. They're one and then another and then another and then another. That's how we need to start communicating with people. If they're 50, if they're 80, who have cognitive skills for reading of a third grader. Not what we wanted to do, but what we need to do. So this really works. I mean, we've got to prove it, right? You taught me that about 20 years ago, when I would have all these ideas, and Rick Baker could go, we've got to prove it, Joe. You got to prove it, Jose. But Rick, look, this really works. You have to prove it. Do the science. Ask the research question. That was my introduction into health services research, from practice of medicine. So you follow so what I'm saying? Is that we give it to them in digestible fragments. All right, and what happens then? Well, so this is it. These are the two before and after simplification. Which one may be easier to read? I mean, it's just a face value. This one is more crunched, randomly truncated, has a grid line. He's going to have to go back up. And this one is pretty much spread out a little bit more. Is that much more space? A little.
See, for me, that reads easier because I have to read that and then I have to try to break it into those fragments to make sure I have the question right before I can answer it.
Yeah. And there are single ideas. This idea is the doctor's office. This one is about the regular hours. This one is about answers to questions, and this is about their needs.
Maybe it's for me, because I'm thinking, you know, I'm so used to taking tests where people are trying to trick you. right? So they have some double negatives in there, some other things going on. So if it's, so with this long sentence, I have to try to break it up into the sections to make sure I really understood it before I answer it.
Yeah.
And so it will take me longer when it's like this.
So you don't think the hell plants trying to trick me?
They're trying to trick me to give them the answer they want. I don't.
I definitely agree that the right is easier. Right. It's just I think the only thing is people are going to go, well, why is there a space? You know, there might be a little bit of that, and I don't know how you somehow get used to it, or, you know, it's just you're not expecting that.
I would find it a little distracting. Is there a balance, you know, between...
Can you put commas after them?
Yeah, I like the fragment idea. That's very logical, but when there is such a space, when I first see that, my first thought is there's two questions.
Oh, you mean it's like this
or
space here?
Yeah.
This space here.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, those are the kind of things we're going to ask.
Right.
You know, does that trouble you? If I give you information in this way as opposed to this way wrapping around,
right.
Is giving you ideas, simple ideas, is that really troubling you? We don't read like that, simply.
Right, we don't.
It's more like poetry than prose.
But, you know, so you have the commas over here, some commas, but, you know, will commas, and I don't know, help at least people understand that that fragment is ended there and now we're moving on to the next sentence?
I actually did this with these two together, and these two together, and it went up to about fifth, sixth grade level, so that might be better.
So what about one column that you said worked for this group, and you do the first two lines in one line, and then the second, third, fourth line?
Yeah, so if you look at the handout, though, you can see that this kind of truncation is not on the handout. So I was looking at both ways. So this is the optimal way if you want to get it way down. But these, you can look at this handout, and you see that I use two lines in sixth grade, fifth grade, fifth grade, eighth grade, and that's okay, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it seems that using two lines would be sufficient from what I hear in the group. But this is great because, again, this is a work in progress, so what you're telling me is very helpful.
You want that balance between the lower literacy group, but you don't want to
overdo it.
Create it so that people who read at a higher literacy level and are more used to that see this become frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
And then
you don't get the others.
But Joe, but the two lines are, he's saying it's fifth or sixth grade.
Yeah.
Well, that's
okay. But that'd be good.
But
would you also suggest just after hours you just put the comma, which is there in the yellow one?
Uh-huh. Right.
Keep it as four lines. Just put the comma right there.
Yeah. So if you so if you just left
it, would indicate that there's something more to come.
Right. So if you had it even in the four lines, so you could do two lines, but even in the four lines, as long as you had a comma after regular hours, then that first two lines
go together, and the second two lines go together,
and the.
That's good. That's a very good thought. That's a very good. In other words, as in the context of reading, somebody will see that.
Right.
That would be more like a normal reading as opposed to readability poetry.
Right.
But I like poetry.
Yeah, I would. No, it would be like poetry. It would be like poetry.
No, those are good thoughts. Very good thoughts.
Right. Absolutely.
But two lines will work, as you can see in the handout. They work well. If I'm at fifth grade, I'm good. So this is the readability scores of all the items. The simplified version before we fragmented, which is a lot lower than the original, and this is the fragmented version. Mm-hmm. But even with the simplified, you could see that we were way up.
Yeah.
In other words, there are some things we need to convey that we could just can't find the words if we don't use so many words in such an arrangement. You know, the semantics and the syntax. We just can't get away from that. But fragmenting, and I like the ideas that I heard today, so thank you for that. Fragmenting it really brings it down. It's like a windshield factor. So you're reading it as a third grader word, it's easy to present it. And other things are looking at a redundancy, putting some shading behind each item so that it draws the reader to, you know, light pastel behind it. Things we're talking about, things like that. And let me just quickly just say, this is the rating response option for the rating items in CAPS. This is the standard rating item. And it reads at 15th grade level, and a reading E score of 15, which makes it virtually impossible to read. You know, using any number from 0 to 10, where 0 is the worst healthcare possible and 10 is the best healthcare possible, what number would you use to rate all the healthcare in the last 12 months? All your healthcare, okay. What do we do with that?
20.
This is what. And then you have 0 to 10. Now, this concerns me because I asked Ron how you use that. Grade 6s, but and I was thinking before I asked Ron that maybe they just take it and put it into quartiles. You know, just 2 to 0, 3 to 5, 6. And summate them in quartiles and use lower quartile, higher quartile. So I basically did this. How was your health? How was the health care you received in the last 12 months?
The best?
Good, not good, the worst.
Redundancy. Redundancy, giving it as a word, giving it as a signal. I had a friend of mine gave me another signal for the worst health care he got. I asked him if this was in Jersey.
I said, I'm sorry, but I couldn't use it. I want it, but I can't.
different digits.
All righty. Well, how about this?
I love it.
This is an item to a survey that's being developed. It's a, Rick, you'll appreciate this.
I was bothered by that survey.
let's apply the cognitive design principles to that.
Snack. Is it simple?
No. Do they have 20/20?
It doesn't go so normal.
It's designed to drive business.
does it have a normal flow? Is it attractive? Is it consistent? I see consistency in that, but. Is it clear?
It's not clear. That's why Rick said you drive this. It's not clear. You must need glasses, right?
That's it. Well,
your ophthalmologist, secret maker.
Let me ask this group something. If you were to receive a survey and all the items were like this, how would you feel about that?
Stress.
Who would gladly fill this out for about 20 items? Okay. Well, folks, that pretty much concludes this presentation. remember snack, remember fragmentation. But one thing about one readability, there must be caution in its use. I only use it to guide me. I don't depend on it necessarily to put the fragments or the sentences together. Because I have to pick the words where to truncate, and I have to have word choices when I simplify and remove verbiage. So that's on you now. That's on you to figure out what's best for the people you're trying to reach, who is your population of study. And the other one is the criteria. And my criteria is that I use it as a guide. So the caution is, I can have 10 words together and flip them around. And they make no sense, and they still have the same readability. Be very careful with using them. All right, thank you very much for coming. I enjoyed this interaction. I learned a lot. I appreciate your help.
Thank you. Nice job.